Hey everybody, and welcome to Script Blast, the podcast that teaches you how to write better screenplays and write a better life. In this episode, Hudson interviews brothers Tony and Ryan Smith and talks with them about their new sci-fi thriller, Volition. Originally from South Africa, Tony and Ryan grew up with a passion for film and deeply introspective storytelling. They soon moved to Vancouver, British Columbia, where they dabbled in the film scene and solidified their work as a writing-directing duo. Entranced by the unknown, Tony and Ryan are passionate about telling stories that address deeper, abstract concepts, all centered around the mysteries of human existence. Today, they share the key to telling fictional stories in authentic ways and how you can do the same in your writing. If you're feeling a bit lost in your writing journey, or you're just looking for that motivational kick to get you going again, be sure to check out Script Blast Members, our private online community where screenwriters share experiences, collaborate, and hold each other accountable in our goals. Hang out with others in our weekly video Zoom calls, which are a combination of lessons and writing sprints, and enjoy our library of articles and resources to help you become the best writer you can be. Today, we're getting together to have an hour of dedicated writing, using one of the most effective methods to help get scripts done. Want to know more? Join today, free for a week, at members.scriptblast.com. Now here's Hudson, Tony, and Ryan.
So Tony and Ryan, how are you guys doing?
I'm doing well over here. Ryan, how about you? How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm well. I'm in the sunshine, which is rare. Yeah. So that's great.
And Hudson, how are you?
I am doing also well. It's equally beautiful here. We're on separate coasts and the sun is shining on both of us, which is always a miracle.
Yeah, we'll take it. We will take it up here for sure.
This is unique. I don't know if I haven't done a Zoom call with two people before. I think I've done one in the same room. So this is fun. Do you guys have a combined name, you know, like Brother Smith or something like that? Or do you hang on to your individuality?
We have a symbol. We have just like this art symbol that we wear as a shield. No, we don't.
No. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Not really. I mean, you know, I think we are just the brothers Smith. I mean, we're not, but we're Tony and Ryan. I think
You know,
I think other people call us other things, but yeah, we're just us.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I got to know you guys at Phoenix Film Festival 2018, somewhere in there.
2019.
Yeah, it's really our timeline is really drug out since then for everybody. So it's hard to go back.
It's a blur.
Yeah, but we absolutely loved your film Volition, and we were, you know, it's always fun, especially at that festival, to be on the same journey with so many other filmmakers. I mean, getting to see your movie coming out and loving your movie, watching it and all that kind of stuff. And I want to talk about that, but I want to try something different with this interview, because is it a spoiler to say Volition is time travel? Do you talk about it in those terms? Because it's a little bit of a twist, right?
I mean, yeah, we try to like steer everybody away from it, like everybody.
So I just ruined from the beginning. It for everybody.
No. But the thing is, everybody, whenever they pitch the movie, they include that as part of it. It's not really time travel, but it certainly has temporal, you know, jigsaws going on, and right. It's a puzzle piece that uses time for sure. Yeah,
cool. So I want to make this a temporal jigsaw interview. So I want to try to tell your story going backwards. So we'll start like right now, and then we'll end this interview talking about you guys as kids or something like that. We'll see how it goes.
Nice.
So first of all, okay, so Volition has come out. It's now streaming on Showtime, which is amazing for you guys. But what I want to talk about is, we'll go back to it, but what have you guys done since Volition? What's been happening? What's next for you guys, both as a team and individually?
Well, we've both, I think, been amazed and just really excited to see how Volition's done. You know, it's really found its own niche audience. You know, it's a cerebral science fiction film. So, and again, it's about a clairvoyant who sees his own death and doesn't believe in free will. He believes that he's fated, you know, no matter what he sees, it always comes true. So it's been fun to see it received. Since then, Ryan and I have been developing, writing, pulling each other's hair out as usual, like we usually do, on a number of different projects. And I think along the way, what have I been up to? I think I've done some directing for hire work, which has been really fun. Just to kind of still, I get to cut my teeth on that. And really, we're just kind of quietly developing our work in the background here. A few projects actually that are very close to Volition, a step up, a step sideways, but definitely related.
What does that look like for you guys to be exploring projects? Like, how does it start? Like, one of you says, hey, wouldn't this be cool? Oh, let's develop that. And like, how many ideas are you developing at the same time? How do you know what to focus on? How does all that work?
Yeah, it's definitely, it's always such a juggle for us, because that is the question. Like, what do you what do you put your main focus into? Because we, at the moment, we probably have like five projects that are at various stages of development. And then other ideas that we've always talked about that we know we want to tackle. And some projects are together, other projects we're working on separately, but supporting each other. And yeah, I mean, lately we've been sort of like talking about this one concept that we're both excited about, and we're letting it percolate for now. The pandemic's been interesting in that we can't see each other as often, but I think what we're doing is allowing our minds to sort of explore the topic, and then every time we chat, we'll be one step ahead, and then eventually we'll actually dive in and start being more formal with it.
Yeah. So
at the moment, we're still in an exploration phase on this one project that we've been talking about.
It's interesting as far as the percolation process with Ryan and I, in that this one idea that we're actually most excited about right now, and there are like a few candidates as far as what is the very next thing that we get off the ground. But, you know, we've been toying around with a certain idea for a while. And then Ryan had this one like entry point into it like about a year ago, and it was awesome. But again, like Volition, it took so many years to get developed properly. It wasn't quite there. And then a couple of weeks ago, him and I were discussing it, and we both landed upon something else that was very exciting. And so it's just really cool. The process is so mysterious to us still, where like the subconscious is actually doing so much of the work behind the scenes for you. And then it's just a matter of finding that stillness or finding those, you know, those entry points. So
I think that's so true. And you guys are just clicking with me so many ways in my brain, both in the way that I work with Jordan, who directed This World Alone, and how we were going back because we're promoting this movie. Now we're going back. What was the timeline? It's so long ago now when we first made it, but it was a similar story that we had an idea we were all in on. We were going to make it. And then on a fly, I sent him some pages and he's like, oh, let's do this. It's the cheaper, like easier thing to pull off. Let's go ahead and do that. And so that became This World Alone. And it was a very kind of last minute kind of thing. What is that process? I know it's a very kind of in the ether kind of magical process. It's hard to put your hands on. Is there anything practical you guys do to take a germ of an idea and turn it into momentum or turn it into of something that's fleshed out?
I mean, I personally sometimes struggle with coming up with one concrete process because different ideas sometimes almost like some of them get born quicker and easier and than others. And so, you know, very often, I mean, Ryan and I love like the process of just breaking a story and like, you know, just to have a beat sheet, and it allows you to kind of to write the story out very quickly in a rough draft, but not have to worry about the details too much. And so I think as long as we are getting to that stage, I think we are usually off and running pretty quickly. We can tell if something's worth exploring further pretty quickly.
Yeah. One other technique, and again, it's the same. It's for any project. It always has a different path. But you know, we talk about things a lot. So first of all, like just tossing the idea back and forth until it starts to solidify around a core. And then sometimes we've done in the past. I remember for Volition actually on some of the drafts that we were doing, where we actually like we knew a lot of the story already, but just to loosen up our take on it and not be too worried about how it all connects, we did a exercise. I don't know if you remember this, Tom, but we did an exercise where we just imagined what the trailer might be. And like, so what are these cool moments that you're just pulling out of the air and you don't even know how they all connect, but you're like, okay, this moment, that moment, this moment. And it opened up like new pathways that we hadn't been exploring. So that's fun brainstorming.
It's fascinating. Yeah. And you know what, it actually, I play music as a hobby, and it allows my brain to kind of, I do a lot of the subconscious, I think, work that the brain does with writing screenplays. And one of the things that I've learned as well that I think I am applying to screenplay writing now, which is freeing me, is that a song, you know, has a structure just like a screenplay does. You know, it's got your sort of your setup and then your verse and then your pre-chorus and your chorus, et cetera, et cetera. You don't have to write them in order. If you can find an A section, so like what Ryan's saying with the trailer, if you can find these moments that are like calling to you for some reason, don't worry about where they belong. They might be chorus, they might be verse, they might be bridge, you know, in the screenplay world, but the subconscious is telling you something. And we just follow that now. We really listen to it without kind of labeling it too soon.
I love the trailer process because you're still thinking visually. Like as a writer, my least favorite thing, and I think for a lot of writers, is like writing a log line, right? Like summing it up into like one sentence is always impossible. But A, I don't think it's all that helpful for you. But I love this trailer idea because it is a visual, very useful way to make sure you're hitting those beats. Like what are the big pieces that are going to, and it's not just marketing, but the same thing that attracts us to stories is also what sells stories. So I think those two things are connected in many ways. I'm curious, when you did that thought experiment of the trailer, did any of those pieces end up in your actual trailer when you got to the movie?
I don't know. I'd like to say yes, but it's very hard to distinguish what was, you know.
I know.
Imagining the trailer versus imagining the whole film. So
I think some of the elements of like James's condition, sir, my dog's going to join us, if that's okay. James's condition and the fact that he's struggling with it. I think that was, I mean, obviously always the core of the movie, but I think also from what I remember is like some of the, you know, you start to hit on the central relationship in a trailer. Like you'll always see like the love interest or the who's pulling at whose heartstrings sort of thing. And I think in a way those things, you know, made it through. But
it's really smart. I do remember you bringing that up. And I mean, it really does. It gets right to the spine of the story, actually, you know, because it's doing what a logline does, but it's doing it kind of thematically and visually very quickly, you know, in a world where X, well, now guess what? Y, to bring about Z, you know, I mean, really, it's just very clever the way they're done.
So we haven't really talked about, so Tony, you're mainly a director, Ryan, you're mainly a writer. How do you guys work together? What's the collaboration process like?
Sure. I mean, I think we both write as sort of a primary form of expression. Okay. I think even Tony with his directing stuff is always coming from a place of ideally directing something that's he's part of the creation of or like has written. In terms of how we collaborate, we've always brainstormed the concepts together, or sometimes one of us will have a much deeper grasp of the concept first. Like for instance, with Volition, Tony was working on Volition on his own for the longest time, and he actually had a full first draft of the script. And he and I would talk about it, and I wasn't part of it. And I was part of it just as like a brother, you know, fellow writer, like talking about it. And then at a certain point, we came up with a new approach to it, and we decided to tackle it together. And then we started just sort of iterating on the drafts, and it went from there.
Yeah, I think Ryan and I are both just really drawn to certain themes. Of course, we're brothers, so you know we were affected by very similar things in our lives. And so we care about the same things. And I think we are both moved to tell certain stories. And, you know, Hudson, you and I have talked, the three of us have talked about science fiction and how intelligent and elevated and how much good it can do as far as talking about deeper issues that sometimes you can't hit when it's on the nose too much. And so I think for Ryan and I, you know, again, we have our separate work, but that's what brings us together. So we find something that we know we can like get gray over together, you know, because it's going to take a couple of years to get off the ground. And, you know, and for me, I personally struggle with, you know, the dream was always to be a filmmaker like my heroes, to make the movies that I wanted to make. And so being a director for hire, I'm so thankful for it, but I don't feel that way. I feel more like a filmmaker who's more indie. And then I get the privilege of working on directing, very often editing, because I'm an editor as well. But the important thing for Ryan and I is, again, to come together on those special stories.
That's awesome. So yeah, let's move back a little bit into Volition. So tell us just the process of writing and making that movie. And I'm especially interested because you kind of talked about how you guys have to connect over an idea and it's something personal to you. I'm really curious what gray area you were exploring with that film as well. And maybe give us another pitch of what it's about and all that.
Yeah, sure. Ryan, do you want to jump in on this one too?
In terms of what it's about, I mean, I can, you touched on it, but in terms of what the film's about is, it's about a character, James, who is sort of living on the fringe of society. He's not doing so well. And the reason is because he's actually, for most of his life, he's been clairvoyant. So he gets snippets, little visions of his future, and everything he sees always comes true. So he feels that he's trapped in this kind of faded existence. And throughout his life, he's used it as a way to get by. And so he started doing petty crimes to see what's going to happen and take it to his own advantage. And this has got him wrapped up in a few sort of shady characters. And along the way, he meets this young woman who he has a connection with that he's getting some sort of a vision, but it's somehow it's different. And he sees the potential of something different in his life with this woman. But around that same time, he has said yes to helping this local crime boss move some illegal diamonds. And as he says yes to that deal, he suddenly gets this flash, this vision of his own imminent murder. And so for the first time, he knows he's going to be murdered and it's going to be soon. He just doesn't know who is going to be involved in it. And so him and this woman end up going on the run, trying to escape his fate that he knows is going to come true. And there's many a twist after that, basically that his psychic visions are not quite what he thinks they are. And there's a whole other mythology built in there.
It's such a cool idea. It's such a cool movie. And just hearing you pitch it again, like, oh man, I need to watch it again. But it also feels like, man, this could be a TV show. This could be a comic book. This could be a whole world building thing. Like there's just so much that could come out of this. Was there any more pieces or did you go down any other path or was this always just, let's just make the movie?
First of all, there is potential to expand it for sure. And we have talked about it and we're quite excited about potentially doing so, but it was always just going to be this movie first.
Cool.
It does work as an origin story in many ways. And of course, if you've seen the movie, you could go back, you know, quite a bit as well to get to even further into the origin story. But, you know, just even as far as like what makes Ryan and I connect, you know, with these kind of movies, that the movie always had the clairvoyance, seeing his own death structure in a way, but it didn't have like the thematic strands of fate and free will. And, you know, if you believe, even psychologically, if you believe that you're never going to make a movie, you're always stuck, you're never going to lose the weight, that is actually a psychological prison that we all relate to. And so Ryan and I kind of, when we found that kind of humanist side to it, to the characters and to the character, that's, I think, what finally got us to really find what would make it work for us, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just to go on that, I mean, Tony, because when Tony, with working on that first draft, I mean, he said this in other interviews before, but I'll just say it for you right now that, you know, at a certain point, he felt a little stuck as a filmmaker and was like, what is it going to take to get me out of this mental trap? And, mm-hmm. you know, what would it take? And like, you know, obviously seeing your own death or seeing that, being stuck in this loop is going to be detrimental to you. That might be the only thing that can force you to actually break your own behavior and your own patterns. Yeah.
And are these like kind of, are these conversations that you guys are like having all the time anyways? I mean, there's got to be some benefit to being brothers in the collaborative process that not that you share a brain, but like you said, you share experiences. You probably share more time together than other collaborators would and things like that.
Yeah, we do. And we both, I think, have a, you know, a pretty healthy fascination with just what makes the human being tick. And, you know, that, again, stretches from like, you know, just regular psychology and, you know, the study of that field to more esoteric stuff like, you know, clairvoyance or time or, you know, all those concepts that we all love as science fiction writers. So, yeah, we have a lot of funny conversations and they have, I mean, we have, and the thing is we're very open with each other too. You know, we can laugh, we can cry, we can really go to some places. Mm. And I mean, I still feel bad with thinking about some of those poor Starbucks customers who've seen both of us in tears at different points. But yeah, we have these weird conversations and you know, I've always really loved meditation and that just, what is the brain? What are we? Where do our ideas come from?
Yeah.
And so, you know, dealing with the subconscious and dealing with dreams and having, we've all had deja vu moments. Some of us have had stronger, almost clairvoyant moments. You know, I have had some weird things that just kind of always caught my attention. And so, you know, so it was written from, Volition was written from an honest place as far as me realizing, as Ryan said, that I was feeling stuck, that I was in my own kind of psychological prison. And that also I have like a tendency to really get into kind of, you know, the psychic world and the esoteric world, as does Ryan. We talk about that stuff. We debate it. Is it real? Does it happen? You know?
Right.
Yeah. We tend to be on, like, it feels like we were both big fans of Lost and there was always like the man of faith and the man of like science or skepticism. And Tony and I are often like on two sides of that debate, both open to either side. I tend to be more skeptical, but still open to believing. And Tony tends to be able to take the leap, but is also skeptical. So
yeah, I could be wrong, but I'll take the leap. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Sure. I feel like the entire filmmaking journey kind of is a leap of faith, right? I mean, you're moving towards this thing with a really a sense of delusion that you can pull this off. And and as long as you keep putting one foot in front of the other and getting lucky or getting, you know, some kind of coincidence or magic that's happening in your life in order to get there, that all these, I mean, it's just insane. Anybody can make a movie having gone through the process. So talk a little bit about that, of just why did you think you could pull off, you know, especially such a cool, ambitious movie when you started with that first idea?
I mean, so Ron and I have been making shorts since we've been kids, you know, and I think we were always kind of schooled in certainly the approach of, okay, well, what do we have? You know, well, we have an empty house, parents are away for the night, we have a camera. And so kind of like with you and Jordan, you know, like, you know, we love storytelling. We love really solid character-based stories. So we're always coming from that place. And then again, you know, science fiction, and we didn't sort of choose science fiction as like, oh, that's, you know, that's a clever way to make a smart movie. It's just that that's just what we like. We like films like Ex Machina, or going back to, you know, old school films like Altered States or something like that. But so, yeah, we just realized at one point that, you know, unless we made the film ourselves somehow, it was just never going to get made. And we were both willing to actually, and I did, I actually purchased a ton of gear myself to do it ultra, ultra low budget. We just finally got there where it's like, you know, either we're going to be always kind of on the other side of the dream. And, you know, the more I like retreated into not approaching, the scarier it became in a way. As it does with anything that we do, you know. And so I mean, I think Ryan was actually, it's great having a partner actually, because Ryan was really instrumental in somehow and sometimes shining the light on me when I couldn't see through the darkness, and I think vice versa as well. And because it's a massive leap of faith. Nobody knows if a movie is going to do well, if it's going to be cool. You know, Ryan and I actually, our first cut, speaking of like, you know, dreams versus reality, our first cut was a nightmare.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It was, how long was it? Like 2.5 hours or something, or or more.
So we want to give up right there. I mean, you want to give up right then and there.
Yeah.
But there's so many steps along the way where you want to give up, and like that leap of faith, even just, you know, writing a screenplay is such a, you know, even getting that first draft done is, you know, you get better at it and you can start muscling your way through first drafts faster, but at first it's, you're putting so much effort and you don't know if it's going to go anywhere, you don't know if it's going to be any good. And then when you're working on like draft 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 10, it's still a leap of faith, like who knows if this thing's going anywhere. So it's kind of, we're all kind of a little bit delusional, as you were saying.
Yeah.
But you need that bit of madness and delusion in order to actually create something that might go somewhere. And Volition, almost, you know, we had the opportunity to possibly make it with a production company apart from us, where we would just sort of give it to them or sell it. But we chose not to do that because we wanted to, first of all, it wasn't like a deal we couldn't refuse. It was a deal we could refuse.
Right.
But we wanted to make it ourselves and go through that process as the people who are crafting this thing.
Was there any moment along the line that you regretted that decision, or was it all, you know, not smooth sailing, but at least proud that you had it in your own hands?
I think we're proud that we did it ourselves. I think definitely, you know, we have also seen like the shortcomings of as anyone that does independent film, it's tough, you know, to attract cast, to pay for things, to pay for marketing, for you name it. But no, we learned so much from the process, and, you know, it's like, it's been said so many times, but we'd rather, of course, fail being ourselves than succeed as being somebody else. And, you know, we just want to succeed anyway, but we learned a lot through the process. So.
Yeah. Tell me some of those lessons. What are kind of the biggest things that you're like, oh, next time we're going to do this differently, or maybe we weren't expecting this. It could be screenplay related, or it could be the practicalities of making the film or releasing the film. What were the big lessons learned for you guys?
Well, I mean, just from a production standpoint, you know, we took a lot of the burden on ourselves. We didn't have a huge crew, and it was just insanely hard, like really hard. So, I mean, all respect to anybody that can pull a film off, an indie film off, because never mind it being a good film, just getting a film completed, yeah, so hard. So, you know, next time it'd be great to have just a little bit more in terms of, you know, feet on the ground and hands to help. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we'll see. We also wanted to keep it nimble and small. So it allowed us to do, it gives more flexibility that way. What about you, Tone? Any other things you think would change?
Well, just from a director's standpoint, you know, one of the things that I was really excited about, which made a lot of sense to me, was to do, of course, again, something that was very small, kind of noir, sci-fi, and make sure that the gimmicks, that the special effects were essentially in the storytelling, not in the, you know, the set pieces or in the effects. If I could give myself advice, you know, to that filmmaker, now to that guy, any scene that I had to shoot basically three times, if you've seen the movie, mm-hmm, from different, you know, sort of perspectives. And so, because again, it's dealing with time from, like, you know, I don't want to say anything, but, you know, that was a challenge. I think I would have known more about scheduling and about how long things would take, because we really went like over as far as our schedule. And, you know, I think it was really rough on everybody. And I think that's, you know, I jokingly still apologize to everybody that was involved in the film. From my darling brother who, like, you know, who came on board, you know, as number one. It was exhausting. And so just lessons across the board as far as taking more time, spreading it out a bit more if you can. Same with the edits. The edit was exhausting. So
how do you guys handle, especially with such a complicated concept and script, when you're on set wearing, as indie film does, you have to wear so many hats and you have to do so many things, from, you know, setting the tone for this to the set to, you know, having to tell people they have to work late and all those other things that are in your brain. How do you keep the story in the focus, and how do you balance all those hats?
Well, I was really lucky, honestly. Like Ryan's the producer, Ryan was amazing. He kept me in such a bubble. And cool. I think that's probably, I don't know how rare that is, but I just know that I got to experience that and it was amazing. And I've been on other sets where, you know, that's what you want. And I mean, for that to happen on our set, and there were fires all over the place that Ryan was dealing with. And so, Ryan, maybe you want to talk about the multifaceted multitasking that you did.
Yeah. It's like, as the production process was amazing. I look back at it, like, I miss it. And I miss those, you know, we did so many all night shoots where the sun was coming up and you kind of, the days bleed into the next day.
Wow.
It was also traumatic in so many ways, in that, like, it was stuff where it was like transport of vehicles that we had, where we didn't have enough people to transport the vehicles. So on top of other things, like at the end of the shoot, it's like driving cars across the town and then picking up the next car and driving that. And stuff like that, where you're just, it's just logistics.
Yeah.
But we did have one crazy night that Tony can talk about, you know, because I actually wasn't there for this moment, but when the cops, do you want to talk about that moment with the cops?
Sure.
And James?
Sure, yeah. But I'll say, before I get to that story, the thing I think as for a director, and it's probably true for all departments, you know, key department heads, but definitely the director more than anyone, which is why it's so valuable having an amazing producer like you, Hudson, like Ryan, to protect the director, is that you need to compartmentalize. So it's not actually that I wasn't aware of certain things. I was, of some things, not everything, but I'm more concerned about losing my shots. Mm-hmm. As much as I am about, like, you know, transport. And so Ryan was just great to not tell me those things.
Yeah, I mean, that was intentional, in that, like, I knew that, you know, we were both on the same page creatively, in terms of, we talked so much about the script, and I knew Tony had his plan working, and it was a matter of, like, how do I protect what's happening on set so they can do their thing and everything else can keep running smoothly. So
a very funny story, I guess. You know, we've been permitted. We're fully, you know, real movie that's out there shooting. But this one scene we're shooting, it's late at night, and it turns out we just need to drive the old sort of Cadillac around our neighborhood for some nighttime shooting with James, our lead character, and he needs to be, like, caked on with blood because he's just been involved in some shenanigans. And so, you know, we do our car mount, we do our lighting mount, and we realize actually we don't have a permit to do exactly what we want to do. We have a permit for the whole film, we're insured, but for this little But you know, it's around my neighborhood, so I'm like, let's just do it. So I hop in the back of the car. I'm holding the B cam. Byron Kopman, our cinematographer, is holding A cam in the passenger seat, and we're driving and we're filming. And like 15 minutes in, we all of a sudden just see red lights, blue lights surrounding the car, and we're like, oh no. And so we realize how bad this looks because, again, like, you know, camera gear all over the car, no permits, Adrian having blood all over his face.
Yeah.
And then I realize, of course, that I have an airsoft gun in my bag. And so it just looked really bad. But turns out, you know, the cops pulled us over. I can still, like, remember the guy's face, just this look of, you know, he could tell it was a movie, but not expecting to see Adrian's face. And if you've seen the film, it's an amazing face of blood.
Yeah,
but they supported us. They loved it. They, you know, we talked to them about independent film and we're trying to make it on our own. And, you know, Vancouver's a great city for all the work that comes up here, but this was something of our own. And they supported us to the point where they actually escorted us for the next like half hour.
Wow, that is so cool, man.
Yeah, the cop was kind of like fanboying on the movie making process, which is
hilarious.
Yeah. It's funny. We have a similar story. Well, not quite that similar, but another cop's being called on us, which maybe is like an indie film rite of passage, right? We had permission to shoot again everywhere we were shooting, except we kept driving by this house that was like completely covered in vines and it was for sale. So leading up to production, we're like calling, trying to get this real estate agent to let us shoot at this house. And nobody ever called us back. So we were like, let's just stop real quick. We're just going to do one scene. We'll be in and out in 30 minutes. And within 2 minutes of pulling up there and getting out, realizing that we're in like North Georgia Mountains, small town, a cop pulls up and is like, hey, do you have permission to be here? No, but can we just, and I'm trying to talk fast so they can keep shooting in the background or whatever.
Yeah.
And as it turns out, like the person across the street, like knew the cop. And so they immediately called and said something was up. And then the cop gets the mayor on the phone, to the mayor of the city. Hey, wow. Can people film him? Told the story. The cop was extremely nice. The mayor was extremely nice, but said we were not allowed to shoot there. So we had to find another spot for that scene. Oh.
Yeah. All right. Too bad. Got them all involved. Wow.
That's pretty incredible. Yeah.
So tell me about Vancouver and how long you guys have been there and just what the film scene is like in that area.
Yeah, Vancouver's a busy production hub. We've lived here since 1990. So it's a little while here. It's funny, you know, we always wanted to move to the States. We're from South Africa. And then when we were really young and we found out that it was Vancouver, it didn't take us very long to realize that like our favorite TV shows were shot in Vancouver. We both loved MacGyver and 21 Jump Street. So you know, we were really excited to come up here. And within the first year, we saw them filming Air Bud by our house. And so it was always just very magical. You know, Vancouver, it's just a very creative pocket. And I think because we attract and have attracted so much incredible American and international talent up here, those of us who live here get to kind of dream a little bigger because we know it's possible, I think, in the city. Yeah. And so it's been great for us. Rye, I mean, how's your experience of?
Yeah, no, same. I mean, we've definitely been inspired by so many of the productions that have shot up here. We both dabbled in acting when we were younger, so like that was those early tastes of being on bigger sets as well and sort of getting a feeling for it. But you know, Vancouver, it is mostly a service town, so it's like projects that are set up in LA and then they end up being shot here. And so the crew is from Vancouver, but a lot of the writing and some of the directing is from here too, but a lot of the writing is LA based. And so we've always wanted to kind of push against that and create our own homegrown productions. And so Volition, it was amazing to have a lot of the talent, like Alex Ponovic, who is now, you know, killing it on Snowpiercer and Van Helsing, and Adrian McMorrin, Magda Apanowicz, John Cassini, Frank Cassini, Bill Marchand. These are all people who have worked a ton for these larger American productions. And so for them to be part of something that was homegrown in Vancouver, I think it was fun, a lot of fun and gratifying for them. And also for us, it was just a huge win to have them on board.
It sounds like you guys are very similar to what Atlanta is now in the States, which is where we are, and which is very similar. Everything is developed out in Hollywood and then brought out here to film, which is really great if you're, you know, an AC or something. Yeah. It's a real struggle if you're a writer or director or looking for lead roles as an actor. And so we constantly struggle with, you know, what is the scene? What is the kind of thematic filmmaking scene of Atlanta? What is the Atlanta film scene? Do you guys struggle with that, figuring out your personality at all? Like, if you had to sum up, like, what is, you know, because you guys are seemingly heavy hitters in this indie scene now in Vancouver, having made such a successful film. Is that something that's even on your minds of trying to define the scene at all?
Yeah, I think it's, you bring up an excellent point. And in that way, I think we are sister cities, because I think like what happens is when you have the service work, that, you know, coming to your city, and it's fantastic. As you say, there's so much work and opportunity and you get to learn from people, but the writers and directors are brought in from LA. And so, you know, for Ryan and myself, we constantly struggle with, like, you know, going out there and doing work. And the danger is that you can kind of get comfy in the work. I can only speak for myself, actually. Again, getting back to the leap of faith, it's scary to make your own stuff. It's much harder to make your own stuff. It's much easier to be disciplined to go work for your boss than it is to work for yourself as your boss. And so I think as far as Vancouver's identity and as it relates to Atlanta, I can only project my own shit onto everyone and say that, yes, I think there is an identity crisis in Vancouver that is, we still consider ourselves to be a service industry, but we have so much talent here. And, you know, you don't want to have a chip on your shoulder. You know, we don't want to be Toronto. We don't want to be LA. We don't want to be, we just want to be ourselves. And I think to do so, hopefully it's just a matter of doing what you guys did and what we did and what so many other filmmakers do. It's like, you got to make your own stuff. And then hopefully you inspire other people in your city to do the same thing. And then in between all the service work, you know, you gather your friends from those projects to do your indie project.
And I think just to add to that, I think we're each motivating each other. I mean, at least in the Vancouver scene, there's a circle of filmmakers, like our friend Zach Lipovsky. He made the film Freaks with his partner, Stein. They inspired, I mean, we were kind of developing these things alongside each other. And so seeing people like them achieve their success and other friends who, we're friends with Odd Fellows Films, who've made a number of films in town. Cool. These are like the local people we've grown up with, and we're all sort of starting to get our own stuff out there. And so I think there's an emerging local thing happening. You know, hindsight will make it more clear. And I'm sure it's the same for you guys too, where you are.
Yeah, yeah. I love that perspective. And it really is true. Like, you know, you look at some of these scenes that have developed over the years, the kind of mumblecore thing, or even going back to, you know, you've got Scorsese and Spielberg and all that crew kind of making stuff at the same time. I don't think it ever feels like a scene when you're making the movies. It's only in hindsight that you look back and you're like, oh, look what happened to all these people. And really it's just, putting boots on the ground, making movies, having fun. And I think that momentum just builds. And like you said, it's a little bit of being competitive with each other. It's a little bit of inspiring each other, a little bit of helping each other out. And that idea of, I think where people go wrong in cities like Atlanta or Vancouver is that chip on the shoulder thing of they get bitter, they get burnout. They're like, why don't I have that thing? And that's going to get in the way of creativity. But if we can have this mindset of, what is it? A rising tide rises all ships, that whole thing.
Right.
Which I really, really believe is true, because that's where all those scenes came from. It's just one person made something, another person made something, another person made something, and all that, you know, it becomes a snowball and that momentum builds.
For sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it is. I mean, it's been said so many times, but, you know, everyone comes with their own like unique set of ways to lay the bricks. You know, everyone gets the same bricks to lay. It's how you lay them. And just to have the faith in yourself to just go ahead and do it is just so key. Because otherwise, you do fall, I think, into just retreating more and more from the dream. And then you have the chip on the shoulder. And, just there's great ways, I think, to combat that. Yeah. By having people around you who are out there working, achieving and striving.
Yeah, I think the community aspect is really everything in this thing. But both in terms of that, all of that, but also just getting stuff done, like you guys having each other and me having Jordan, which I'm kind of curious about that. We talked about kind of that delusion, magic faith that you have to have, but you also have to have some drive and you also have to be able to get stuff done. And I want to talk about the practicality of it a little bit, because I think especially, you know, this is mostly a writing podcast. And so a lot of writers are like, how do I be more consistent with my writing? How do I sit down and get it done? How do I finish my screenplay? All these kind of stuff. How do you guys have any tips or what you guys do in order to practically, you know, make it happen?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ray.
For me, at least it's consistency. That is kind of like, if you can keep the train going, I find it's easier to keep the train going, sort of thing. Like once it's once you stop for a while, it's hard to kind of sink, for me at least, it's hard to sink back into the story. But if I'm most successful when I've been able to carve out a consistent period of time. So whether it's like, I know, okay, every morning I'm going to wake up an hour early and do like an hour of my writing, then I can do my that hour, which is not a lot of time, but it's something. And then the rest of the day, even though I'm busy doing other stuff, I can be percolating on what I'm going to be writing next. Mm. And, you know, before bed, I'll sometimes think about the next scene or whatever, and then wake up ready to write it. So that's been helpful for me. And then I don't know, there's something inside me that is probably like fear-based, which is probably unhealthy, but is, I just feel like an urge that I have to keep creating, because I just know how hard this industry is. And so, yeah, to be honest, like that is something in me that I just, I'm a little hard on myself in terms of like, there's a push to like, I got to keep moving things forward. Sometimes I wish I were easier on myself with that stuff, but also I am thankful for it too, because it leads to getting stuff done.
Tony, what about on your side? Maybe not on writing, but with just, you know, practically, I feel like even with the filmmaking stuff, that the same thing, if you take a break, that momentum's going to freeze up and it's really hard to keep it going.
Yeah, I think the writing is where I feel the most. I think, you know, directing, I mean, because again, every time you get out there, you're nervous anyway, and you're having to sort of be very present. But the writing for me, it's like, sometimes when I take a break, and I struggle with consistency with my writing, but it's like, I forget that I ever wrote. It's like, I know once I'm in the pool, I love the water and you can never get me out. But like, if I've been out for long enough, I'm like, man, it's freezing. Like, I'm not going in that water.
Funny.
And once I'm in, I love it. It actually makes me, you know, Ryan and I've talked about it, but like in my sort of brain chemistry, I'm the happiest when I'm writing.
Yeah.
And yet it's this real struggle, because it's, you know, it's sometimes just very ugly what's on the page. You know, we all have these visions of what we want, then there's what is in reality. And that's just the process of evolution, of course. Yeah, I think just the consistency overall is key to keep on, I don't know, just keeping that fire burning somehow daily, even if it's a little bit, really helps, I think, a project move forward.
Yeah, it's my wife will always say, man, you seem like you're in a bad mood. Go write something.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. And I think it's surprising. And what most writers don't realize is they try to set really ambitious goals because they're trying to get it done. But so much happens in just what you said, is just taking baby steps, doing a little bit every day, because time passes whether you want it to or not. And those little pieces really add up a lot quicker than you think.
Yeah. I mean, if you
they really do.
If you're writing one page a day, if you get, you know, then in 90 days you got a script or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's manageable, but it is really daunting, and it's not as simple as like, oh, I'm going to write one page. It's usually it's like conceptual, trying to figure out what the story is even. Right.
For sure. Which is why I love the kind of recurring percolating thing that you kind of talked about, and just using your brain power. It doesn't always mean putting words to a page. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about before I met you, because I feel like I don't know a lot of your story, kind of the breaking in story, what you were setting out to do, what you worked on pre-Volition and all of that.
Yeah, sure. So I'm 4.5 years older than Ryan. So I got my start in the industry a little sooner, but we both, you know, come from an acting background when we were kids, because it was the first kind of available thing that kids, you know, can do. My first real break was, you know, I went to film school. My first real break was the Directors Guild of Canada had a program where they were funding 35 millimeter short films. Cool. You know, it was a contest. And so I was one of the winners of that. It was a paranormal drama.
Nice.
And it did really well for me. And it got me directing, you know, played in festivals around the world and did moderately well. And it got me directing Canadian television. And so that was kind of my break into the directing world. I had been editing on the side, because that's sort of what I've been doing to pay the bills ever since film school.
What year was that?
This is now. So I made that film, was called Reflection. That was 2004.
Okay.
So that's a while ago.
Yeah. How different was the scene then in terms of, you know, would you still recommend to a director fresh out of school, go make a short, do the festival thing, try to get attention that way? Or is it so different just because there's so much more material out there and it's so much easier to make something? I mean, obviously nobody's shooting on 35 millimeter anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. It's such a different landscape. It's true. I don't know actually, because you can do something incredible. That's like a real, like a short, you know, like a good 2 minute, 5 minute that's on YouTube or Vimeo. You know, my short film was 18 minutes. It was like this drama, this like slog. Right. It's a different world, a different time. I think the sophistication now has gone up so much. Like the kids today, the teen filmmakers today are so much better than I think we were then technically. The question is, can all of us still like, you know, get story to propel, you know, everything? Because I think that's the difference, you know, and which will always set apart, I think, the generations of the best filmmakers. So as far as the scene, it's definitely lots more scattered now, it seems. Mm. But I think there's just much, it's more vibrant. There's more talent out there now. You're seeing it more. Yeah, I don't know what else I have to say about that.
And then you made a transition at some point from TV to doing features as well, right?
Yeah, so I've gone through this kind of life cycle choice point a few times, but basically when I was directing those TV shows, I did 4 TV shows in a short period of time, and I was really thankful for them. But again, you know, I grew up wanting to be James Cameron, Steven Spielberg, like Scorsese, Oliver Stone, those guys. I like watching comedies. I don't like directing comedies. Mm. You know, I like certain genres, and I was confused. I thought directors should have to direct everything. And I was like, wow, maybe I'm just not like, either I'm not good at directing that stuff, or maybe it's just not my thing, and maybe that's okay. So I took a break, basically, if you can believe it. I said no, both to my agent at the time, to directing. I said, I don't want to direct unless I'm developing the material, or it's material that lines up with me, or it's something that I personally write. And so it took a while.
Wow.
You know, we made a couple of short films, but that's the trajectory that created Volition eventually. Mm. Yeah.
And I think at the end of the day, that's such a powerful and I'm sure very difficult decision. But at some point, we're going to be at the end of our lives and looking back, and did we do a lot of things that were sort of related to what we wanted to do and made us miserable a lot of times? Or, you know, did we do things that were really life fulfilling? And I think it's important to ask yourself that even at the very beginning of your journey, before you ever start, of what am I willing to say no to? And what am I willing to say yes to? What are my values with my career? And really defining that for yourself from the very beginning.
Yeah, exactly. And it's sorry, Ryan, I'll jump here quickly here. But it's confusing for a director, and maybe it is for a writer as well. But, you know, directing is a big umbrella. And I say this to like my family all the time, because I'm very grateful to be directing. But there's directing the news, there's directing a multicam sitcom, there's directing single cam, you know, Scorsese style. So I don't want to direct everything. And it's taken me a little while to be comfortable with that.
Yeah.
And I think that even ties into the identity stuff around Vancouver. I'm so wanting work and to please everybody that of course I'll direct anything.
Yeah.
But the truth is, no, that's not what I set out to do. So it's a struggle. It's a real, I'll keep you posted.
I think it's also, it's you start dealing with like the economics of it all, that, you know, you have an opportunity to make money doing something, and everyone needs to like make a living.
Yeah, for sure.
Whatever. So sometimes choices get made because of financial necessity. But yeah, I think it's always, if you do end up doing stuff because, hey, it's a gig and I'm going to take it, I think as long as you're, for me at least, as long as you're also percolating, and I keep saying percolating, but growing your own homegrown stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes the gig can help you actually achieve the thing that's more personal to you. And it's a balance. And like, we're trying to figure it out. We're still trying to figure it out.
I love that. So Ryan, you came up after Tony. Did you initially have desire to direct as well, kind of watching him, or were you trying to chart your own path?
Not really. I mean, Tony was just such a director in the way he first of all, as the older brother, he was always a bossier, and I was
directing
a bit more
you.
Like, So, I mean, I directed some plays and stuff in high school. And so I like directing, but I never really, I made some short films, but it was never like my main charge.
Cool.
Writing and acting was more of where I started, and I started doing improv comedy was kind of the beginnings of playing with storytelling in a way, and through high school writing short films and plays with friends. although also Tony and I were making short films together. But eventually, you know, I minored in theater and I was acting, doing theater acting in university. And eventually I just sort of was like, you know, you do a play and it's over. But if you write a script, it's something that can last and can maybe lead to something. So I started taking writing more seriously in my undergrad. And yeah, I started writing features that kind of are terrible and didn't go anywhere. And a lot of it was like sort of very derivative.
Sure.
And I had the identity crisis of feeling like I was sort of on this university path and feeling like film wasn't a real career. I just didn't know. So I ended up, Tony and I were developing some writing ideas, but I ended up basically out of fear going to law school.
Oh, wow.
And so I only did one semester in law school. And then I just had this like mental breakdown of sorts where I was like, I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
And I quit. And I remember walking out of my property law class, just totally like disoriented and confused. So that was a big shift for me. And then after that, I just, with Tony's help, actually Tony kind of like talked me through it. It just focused on writing. And I did a writing program and started writing features both with Tony and on my own. And my break, I suppose, was writing. Tony and I both got offered a job on a teen sitcom that was shooting in Vancouver because we had developed this relationship with another writer who put us forward, and we both had samples that they liked.
Cool.
Tony ended up saying no to the opportunity because he was already quite clear on like what he wanted and didn't want.
Yeah.
I said yes because I do have a comedy background more, and so I wrote on two TV series in sort of Disney sitcoms. And I did that for a number of years and learned a ton and eventually became a writer producer on those shows, which was amazing. But I also always knew that it wasn't the genre that I was destined for, or, yeah. You know, so along with working with Tony on Volition, I was also writing my own features. And one of them started getting some attention at the Austin Film Festival screenplay competition. And
yeah, cool.
Through the what is it called? Screencraft. So I won the Screencraft competition and the fellowship. And so that opened the doors for me in terms of now I'm also juggling kind of writing for hire as a way to make a living on features. So alongside the sort of personal stories that Tony and I are trying to get off the ground ourselves, that's also the path that I've been on.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
What would you recommend for someone to, because I picked up little bits and pieces of cues of how you kind of landed in these deals. One is kind of meeting people. One is making sure you have the samples. One is writing enough that you get past those initial kind of terrible screenplays. But I love that you also have this kind of success story. First of all, you were making stuff happen for yourself, but then you have the success story with the contest as well, which I do think it takes both of those things combined, and you can't just rely on, oh, I'm going to write one thing, put it in a contest, and I'm set, which I think, unfortunately, a lot of writers have that mindset. So what would you recommend to a writer just starting out of wanting to make a career out of it?
I definitely think it's just the writing is the main thing in terms of like really honing your craft. And Tony and I have talked about this a lot in terms of it's so competitive. There's so many scripts out there, but I don't think there are that many great scripts out there. So if you can, and not to say that like the work I've done is great necessarily, but at least the stuff that's been recognized has been really polished. Mm-hmm. And I've done so many drafts on the script that it didn't start out polished. That's for sure. Like,
yeah.
So I think that's something we can control as writers, that we can make something, work on something until it's good, because a lot of scripts, people give up before it gets to that polished state. And I think if you can do that, you can be recognized. And then, yeah, it's, man, I'm still trying to figure it out myself, but
yeah,
it's many irons in the fire. Like, you know, you've got to have just many things going. You never know where coincidence is going to match up with the effort that you've, or, you know, opportunity will arise, but certainly being armed with as much ammo as you can has helped me and helped us. That first writing opportunity on those shows came because Tony and I developed our own series concept that we got off the ground in a small way in Vancouver,
cool.
Which randomly connected us to a writer down in LA who then randomly put us forward to this showrunner who was starting a show. So you just don't know when these opportunities are going to come, but the fact that we had samples ready and that we had been pushing ourselves to get stuff made on our own, I think was instrumental.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's great. I love hearing stories like that just because it shows A, how long it takes, and B, just how many irons you have to put in the fire in order for just one of them to show up. It's like planting seeds, right? One of them's going to grow. You don't know which one it's going to be. So you better plant a whole bunch of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's true.
Actually, before we're going to finish up with the same five questions I'll ask everybody, and we'll do it rapid fire. But before I do that, I'm curious from you guys, what's the dream? Where are you headed? If you could wake up every day and do a thing, whether that's, you know, the type of movies you're making, if you're still doing independent, if you're working in Hollywood, where do you want to be, you know, 5-10 years from now?
Pour moi, which is French for me. honestly, I'd love to be, God, I mean, it's the dream, but I'm allowed to say it, right? It's the dream. The dream is Stanley Kubrick. The dream is to make one movie like every couple of years about like really, really important subject matter to me. And you know, I just think that existence is incredible. And again, it's my esoteric side, but like, there's just so much to say about us and what we are and space and psychology. And that's what I would love, to be a Kubricky, Terry Gilliam-y, Christopher Nolan-y guy.
Love it.
Person.
What about you, Ryan?
Yeah. Yeah, for me, it's, I would love to have the time and mental space to be working on projects that I'm like deeply passionate about and be getting rewarded financially enough that I can really focus on them, because it's like, that's the challenge, is juggling. I mean, I just had a kid a year and a half ago, and so juggling life and work and the projects that you're deeply passionate about is challenging. So the dream for me in the next 5 years is to be building a foundation to provide more freedom for the deeper exploration of the projects that I really care about. So that's a pretty vague answer, but that's...
No, I love it.
That's it. Yeah.
I'm right there with you. All right, cool. So final five questions. You guys can both answer or send them to each other however you want, but I'll quick questions, quick answers. What do you write? How do you describe what you write?
Social science fiction.
Character-based storytelling.
What's your proudest accomplishment?
I think it's Volition, the New York Times Hollywood Reporter Variety reviews. We couldn't believe it. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I would say it's Volition, and then the Screencraft script, the Jacaranda.
Cool. Whatever happened with that script? Anything?
Tony and I are actually, you know, looking at ways to get it off the ground. It's set in South Africa, so looking at what that means. And
nice.
Yeah, we'll see. Cool.
How do you define success?
Well, I think it's taken me 43 years to get to this version of it, but I think you got to be authentic to who you are. And I think that just feels the best, to walk away, to walk towards, be who you are. I think everything else follows. It feels good.
Yeah, I think it is being able to do what is meaningful to you, which is similar to what Tony's saying. If you can somehow exist and be creating something that you care about, that feels like success.
What writers do you most look up to and why?
Off the top of my head, I love Charlie Kaufman and his twin brother, because I love the subversion of expectation that he's so good at. I love the lo-fi-ness, and I love the kind of that kind of comedy. The absurd nature of just being human is just the bee's knees to me. So I love Mr. Kaufman.
And everything, even how weird it is, he still feels personal and extremely personal, like more personal.
Extremely.
Than yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly. So true. Well said. Yeah.
So true. I mean, I definitely admire Aaron Sorkin in terms of, I'm just like, I don't know. I mean, I'm Charlie Kaufman in a totally different way.
Yeah.
But Aaron Sorkin, I still hold him on a pedestal of like, wow, I don't know how he does what he does. And so definitely inspired by him.
Finally, what advice would you give to your younger self?
I think for me, the last movie that I directed, somebody gave me a journal because they saw how hard I was on myself. And they kept telling me to treat people with kindness, including me. And I think along my journey, I think I would have not given up so quickly on some things. I wouldn't have like given up on a certain script saying like, oh, that sucks, and et cetera, et cetera. I think kindness a lot sooner, because now, you know, even during the pandemic, I'm like, well, listen, I didn't write as much as I wanted to. Should I beat myself up? Is that going to help? You know, so I just think being kind overall to yourself and your process. Think about working for a kind boss. You want to work for yourself that way.
So I love that.
Yeah,
I would say to my younger self to have a bit more faith that you can be part of the creative community, and that it's not just something like those who are creating stuff out there are no different from you. Obviously, you have to put in the time and build the craft and build the skill. But for the longest time, I didn't think I had permission to really take it on myself. And now that I have been doing that, I'm still the same person I was when I thought I wasn't allowed to do it. And so if I could go back in time, I would have just forgot all the other distractions that I thought were safer, and I would have just really gone for it.
It's one of the funniest parts. One of my favorite parts about getting older is I just remember being young and thinking, oh, those people have something I don't. And then getting older and you're surrounded by all these people who are now successful only because they put the time in, and you kind of realize it's been a level playing field all along. And it's just about moving in a direction and about doing the work.
Definitely true.
Cool. Well, this was awesome, you guys. Where can people find out more about you personally or about Volition and find your work out there?
They can find me. I'm all over social media. I think it's Tony Dean Smith, Facebook or Instagram. Volition, the website is volitionthemovie.com, where they can find the links to rent, to purchase the movie. Soundtrack, there's some swag there as well.
Nice.
Rye, how about you? Another Volition
links? Yeah, I'm at Ryan Warren Smith on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And yeah, Volition, we'd love if people checked it out. It is on Showtime right now, but if you want to support the indie film part of it, then we'd love if you rented it on iTunes. But hey, you know, do what you can. We'd just love for you to see it and let us know what you think.
Very cool. So, yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much. This was killer.
Thanks, Hudson.
This was great, Hudson.
Connect.
Sweet.
Thanks for having us, man. Great to see you.
You too. We definitely need to do this more often, or get you guys and me and Jordan on a Zoom call and pick each other's brains about stuff, because we're trying to move into feature number two right now and just trying to learn not just our own lessons, but learn from everybody else as well.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, congrats, man. Big time.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in, listeners, and many thanks to Tony and Ryan for being on the podcast. Be sure to check out their movie Volition, available on Showtime and other streaming sites. If you're ready to take your screenwriting to the next level, be sure to go to members.scriptblast.com to join one of the most diverse, encouraging, and accepting screenwriting groups around. The key lies in you. Unlock your potential today at members.scriptblast.com and get your first week free. When you join, be sure to shoot me a message. My name is Avery Cochran. I'm one of the hosts in the group, and I would love to hear from you. Also, if you'd like to talk to Hudson about your writing journey, be sure to shoot him an email at hudson@scriptblast.com. Don't forget, our connections grow stronger with the stories we share. See you around, and remember, keep writing.